This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
7:45 p.m. Sign up now at volunteer@kpft.org or 713-526-4000, extension 316. This is KPFT Houston.
This November, Houston will elect a new district attorney. KPFT will host a debate between Democratic candidate and former police chief Clarence Bradford and the Republican candidate and former judge Pat Lykos. Houston now leads the world in calling for the death penalty and in its incarceration rate. More than any other elected official, the district attorney determines the morals of our city. Questions will be provided by KPFT News and various KPFT reporters and programmers. I'm Dean Becker, and I will host this debate on Tuesday, October 14th, from noon to 1 p.m. on KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
And tonight it's Just Us Grills.
Yes.
Yes.
This is Jack Lindsay.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Glenn Holt.
And Brian Levinka.
And on tonight's show...
I don't know. I haven't seen it. I've
got
six today.
It's right in front of you.
Oh, okay. hey, we have news wrap. How about that? Okay, actually, we do have news wrap. And I don't know. What else do we have?
David Elliott starts out, like he always does, at the first of each month.
Okay.
And then we're going to be talking to the people who are doing Decadent Desserts, which is done by Sisters.
Coming up on October 12th.
National Coming Out Day is this week, and Gary Wood will be here talking about that. That's a benefit for Pride Houston.
Yeah, Saturday the 11th.
And then we have a representative from the Blind Friends of Lesbians and Gays, the Houston chapter. So all that's coming up, plus the features from News Wrap and This Way Out. So we have a lot of things going on.
And we have David Elliott on the line, do we not? Hello, David.
Well, good evening, Jack, and how are you, and how is everybody out at Queer Voices?
Well, this is Jennifer, so I'm here, so yes, we're doing great.
Well, we all survived the hurricane, and it is getting real interesting, isn't it, David?
Well, it is, and I want to talk to you about two things tonight, if I may.
Please do.
Because there are only two things to talk about, and it might surprise you, that I'm not starting out with the election, given that we have the election in 29 days. I'm going to talk about that second. I want to start out by talking about the economy. We are faced with a major crisis that is so profound that it is one of the three greatest crises our country has faced in the past 100 years.
Well, I don't think it's any surprise that George Bush was bailed out about everything that he did before he was elected president by his father's friends or by a tax increase in Arlington, Texas, and now the country basically has to bail him out of what he did. Not to say that he is the only person responsible for this.
Well, certainly. We're dealing with 20, 30 years of failed conservative economic policies, failed conservative ideology. But, you know, I want to share a couple of statistics with you and then talk about what all of this means, why it's happened, and how this affects the election, if I may.
Sure.
We just learned on Friday that during the month of August, the U.S. workforce shed 159,000 jobs, lost 159,000 jobs. That was in addition to 605,000 jobs that had been lost so far this year up until now. So now, doing the math in my head, I believe that 764,000 jobs we've lost this year. We had the worst one-month loss in jobs in 8 years. We also found out last week that automobile sales from August were down 30%. Now, why is that? Is that because, like, you know, maybe people didn't have enough money to buy a car, or they didn't feel comfortable buying a car in this day and age? No. The reason that automobile sales, and this is connected with the job loss, were down so much is that people could not get credit to buy an automobile. It used to be that if you went and applied for a loan to buy a car, on average, 80 or 90% of the time, you were approved. Now we have seen that figure drop down to 50%. So basically, what's happening is the credit market in this country is failing. There's no credit, and credit is the lifeblood of our economy. Consider that small businesses, local governments, municipalities need credit in order to simply make payroll month to month. They're not getting it now. The unemployment rate is about to skyrocket. We're talking about it's going to go way, way, way over 10%. And we're going to be looking at unemployment numbers that are worse than at any time that we've seen since the Great Depression. This is, you know, it's kind of interesting because Americans sit back and, you know, they watch the so-called bailout legislation that was passed in Congress last week, the worst bill I've ever seen, by the way. And they think about what's happening on Main Street as opposed to Wall Street, and they don't necessarily make the connection between how things are on Main Street are influenced by things on Wall Street. And it's an important connection to make, because ultimately the road to recovery on Main Street is going to have to go through Wall Street. You know, we're going to have to federalize the banking system. We're going to have to federalize things like investment equity. We're going to have to get rid of these esoteric phrases we've been hearing about, like a $45 trillion worth of credit, you know, default swaps and what have you. Now, what does this have to do with the election? I was going to toss that question back to you, and you just answered it. You said everything. And here's what's really interesting. With the economy just going totally south on us, doing things that I cannot even say on the radio because you might lose your FCC license. With the economy doing all of these bad things, what did the McCain campaign decide to do over the weekend?
To start attacking Obama.
Yes. They were quoted in several national newspapers as saying, well, they needed to take the focus off of the economy and put it on Obama. Well, folks, I've been looking at polls all day, and guess what?
Guess the news.
That's not working out too well for them. There are a number of polls out. CNN came out with a poll today showing Obama with an 8-point lead nationally, 53% to 45% over McCain. Rasmussen, which is a Republican-leaning poll, gives Obama his biggest lead of the campaign so far. And so, you know, we're coming off of one debate, the vice presidential debate last Friday. Now we have another debate tomorrow night in Nashville, Tennessee, between the two presidential candidates. Where is this presidential election going to go? Well, we're going to go in one of two directions. We could either enter sort of a direction that means a tightening race that's dominated by classic slash-and-burn culture war tactics by the Republicans that results, frankly, in a shrinking margin for Obama and, you know, more closely fought battles in a few swing states. Under this scenario, there is maybe a microscopic chance that McCain could win and, you know, Democratic gains in the U.S. House and the Senate will be pretty small. Or we could see an historic landslide on both the presidential level and big gains in the House and Senate, and also in some, you know, down-ballot races. And I should add that a lot of surprises just all of a sudden are beginning to pop up on our radar screen. For example, early voting right now is occurring in Georgia, as it's happening in a lot of other states. Obama is winning early voting in Georgia, a state that was not expected to be in play.
Yes.
Another surprise. There is a poll out today, you all might have seen this, involving one very conservative state house district in Dallas. This house district takes in Tony Highland Park, very, very Republican-leaning. Obama is beating McCain by 2 points in that poll. Another big surprise is that another poll that just came out within recent days is Cornyn, Senator John Cornyn in Texas, is not beating his opponent, Democratic nominee Rick Noriega, as soundly as was expected. You know, that is a really, really big surprise. And in state after state after state, Iowa, Colorado, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, Ohio, Obama right now is building up very, very, very significant leads. Now, I'm not willing, you know, I've been wrong before. I'm not willing to say this election is a done deal. Obama's going to win. You know, are we really as a country prepared to elect an African-American president for the first time in our country's history? Will we go there? Can we do it? Can we achieve that? I don't know. I want to be a little bit cautious, and if you'll excuse the word, conservative in my predictions. But if you had told me 1 month ago that we would be where we are today in terms of the polling, I, to my discredit, would have laughed at you.
Yeah, me. Yes, I agree with you. Me too.
Yeah, so that's what's going on. It's not a done deal yet. I must note, that if you are within listening distance, if you are hearing this program right now, you have less than 3 hours to register to vote, to be eligible to vote on November 4th. You have less than 3 hours. Mm-hmm. In my hometown of Austin, Texas, I have to proudly say, is expected to register 20,000 people to vote today.
Yes, unfortunately, in Harris County, they expect less people to be registered to vote than in 2004.
Well, you know, and I wonder why that is. I wonder, is part of that due to hurricane displacement?
That was the last, you know, but even beyond that, I think, there was lots of people who actually filled out the cards, but a lot of those people were updating their address. And, you know, I don't know what to think. You know, there's like a million eligible voters in Harris County who are not registered.
Well, here's kind of a shocker for you. Obama has an outside chance of carrying Texas.
Really?
I'm not going to predict that. No way, no how. I have two great friends of mine in Austin that are sending me emails almost daily telling me that Obama is going to win Texas. I don't think it's going to happen. I think he's going to lose by about 3 percentage points.
But that's still very good.
Well, that, you know, if Obama loses by 3 percentage points in Texas, then he's probably winning an electoral college landslide. And by the way, I want to make a point along those lines, if I may. A lot of people kind of confuse the popular vote and the electoral college vote.
Sure.
And folks don't understand that a presidential candidate such as Bill Clinton in 1992 and again in 1996 can win the popular vote by about, in 1992 it was 5.1 percentage points for Clinton, and then in 96 it was 5.9 percentage points, and win a huge, huge landslide in the Electoral College. And in point of fact, right now, I am predicting that Obama is going to win 375 electoral votes, which, let's see, would leave 163 for McCain, if my math is right. I'm doing this in my head. That would put Obama between what Clinton did in 1992 and his slightly larger victory in 1996. In 1992, Bill Clinton won 370 electoral votes. In 1996, Bill Clinton won 379 electoral votes. I'm predicting Obama comes in roughly in the middle with 375 electoral votes.
Well, you know, it ain't over until it's over. So we need people to go out there and vote. And even in Texas, although he's not predicted to win, there's lots and lots of other races that are just as important. Because Obama can't do it himself. It's going to take the Senate, the Congress, and especially with the way things look now. And we got to remember that Bush still has like 4 months left in office. And just imagine the damage he's going to do in those 4 months.
Well, that's certainly true. And, you know, you made the comment that Obama can't vote himself. And I want to say something about that, because, you know, the whole theme, you know, everywhere Obama goes, he talks about, you know, change, you know, being the change that you can imagine. And the important thing about that is it's not about Obama. It's about what Americans hear Obama saying, and then what Americans decide what they're going to go out and do, and the consequences of that. It's our country. It's time to take it back.
Absolutely. And it's not one party versus the other, but it's a matter of electing the right people, the people who have talked about doing things better, and doing some research on that. You know, don't go into the polls and vote blindly. In fact, you know, in 2 weeks we begin early voting here in Texas. And they expect up to one-third of the people to vote during the early voting time in this state. So, and in Harris County, at least, and probably a lot of other places in Texas, that ballot is rather long.
Well, it's really interesting that you use that one-third statistic, Jennifer, because that's Jennifer, right?
No, it's okay.
That was Jack that time.
You know, I'm never going to get it right. Never going to get it right.
We'll have to send you pictures.
But I want to point out that the early voting numbers in Texas replicate what's going on nationwide, because nationwide, exactly one or approximately one-third of Americans are expected to vote early this election season. And indeed, already hundreds of thousands of Americans, if not over a million, already have voted early. And you know, I mentioned one state earlier, Georgia. Obama is winning early voting in Georgia. And that is an amazing and stupendous statistic.
So they've got to overcome his lead from there, right?
Right, exactly. It becomes a ground game. It becomes a get-out-the-vote game. And it's economical for the Obama campaign for their supporters to vote early, because their canvassers, their field staff, their people on the ground, they know when their supporters have voted early, so they get to cross them off a list.
Yes, that's exactly what we do.
That's what we do at the caucus.
Right, exactly. Yeah, well, y'all are old pros at this. I mean, Jack's been doing this for years and years. And it's kind of interesting, this election. I mean, you know, my background is that I'm a former political reporter. And being a political reporter, I didn't necessarily always understand the ground game, how the nitty-gritty of get-out-the-vote, you know, operations worked. And now, finally, you know, being in an organization that's doing this in a bunch of key states, I'm getting to see it firsthand. And it's really one heck of an education for me. And it's made me really appreciate people like you, Jack, who have been doing this for so long.
Well, there's a lot of people that are doing that. And, you know, when you don't have the money to run an air campaign, that is broadcast campaign and print and all those mailers, you got to do the things that you do, you know, cheaply. And there's a lot of people who volunteer and hand out the cards and help get people to the polls and help get people registered. So we've been beaten down so much for so long that we need to get up there and do that work.
Well, exactly. And, you know, just God bless those of you who do it, because our country needs you now more than ever. Everybody, you know, everybody. Lesbian folks, gay folks, bisexual folks, transgendered folks, black folks, Latino folks, young voters, elderly voters, everybody, you know, we're all in this thing together. And, gosh, all I can say is 29 days from now. And, you know, on a personal note, can I just say that I'm really, really happy that I'll be on your show the night before the election, because that's going to be really exciting.
It yes. will be. Real quickly, what about the House and the Senate? What's your prediction there?
Tough to call. Right now, I believe the Democrats are going to pick up in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 seats in the House. Most pundits are putting it at 15 to 20. I think it's going to be a lot larger. In the Senate, a lot of really interesting things are happening all of a sudden. All of a sudden, the Senate races in Georgia and Kentucky, which we didn't expect to be very competitive, are dead heats. And then today, for the first time, people are starting to talk about the Texas Senate race being in play. They're talking about that on the national blogs, openleft.com, Daily Kos, MyDD. If I had to peg a number, I think that we're going to go, you know, we currently have 51 in the Senate. We're going to go to 59. I'm telling you that right now. We've got a really good chance of going to 60, 61, even 62. And if everything breaks in a landslide, you're not going to believe this, but we could actually go as high as 65.
Wow. So, David, what do you do for your day job?
Well, Jack, for my day job, I'm the communications director for a group called U.S. Action and our sister organization, TrueMajority.org. You can find us on the internet at usaction.org and truemajority.org. And Jack, I have to tell you, 2 weeks ago, in a 72-hour period, we organized demonstrations to oppose the bailout legislation, right? We ended up organizing 251 demonstrations in 195 communities across the country, including Houston, in 41 states. It could have been the greatest number of demonstrations organized in a 72-hour period in our country's history.
Wow. Well, congratulations, David. And we'll talk to you a month from today, the day before the election, and we'll see where we go from there.
I'll be looking forward to it. And, you know, I just want to give a big shout-out to all of the listeners of Queer Voices. And if y'all aren't registered to vote, you've got 2.5 hours.
Great. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you, Dave.
I'm Michael Lebeau.
And I'm John Torres.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 4th, 2008. Voters in the South American nation of Ecuador overwhelmingly approved a new constitution this week that guarantees civil rights for gays and lesbians and establishes civil unions for same-gender couples, giving them virtually all the rights of marriage. The nation's 20th constitution also helps leftist president Rafael Correa consolidate power and run for two more consecutive terms. He's a former economics minister and has made the economy a central issue during the first 2 years of his presidency. The new constitution also guarantees free education through college and pensions for stay-at-home mothers. Those provisions build on popular programs already established by Correa to provide low-interest loans for small businesses, building materials for first-time homeowners, and free seeds for growing crops. Opponents worry that Correa's expanded authority will lead to actions similar to those of Venezuela's Hugo Chavez. But the Ecuadorian leader has reportedly maintained considerable political distance from Chavez and has no plans to consolidate his powers as much as Chavez has aggressively done.
But Portugal's Prime Minister José Sócrates has rejected proposals to legalize same-gender unions. Two measures to do that are scheduled for debate in Parliament this month. Unlike his socialist counterpart, José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero, who spearheaded marriage equality in neighboring Spain, Sócrates told the Portuguese Parliament that homosexual unions are not on the political agenda, repeating what he said 3 years ago during his election campaign. The issue has created sharp divisions among the country's progressive political parties. Greens MP Eloisa Apollonia, who's sponsoring one of two same-gender union proposals, told local media that this country, when it waits for the socialists to promote equality, is always put on hold.
Roman Catholic officials have rejected the first choice of the French government to be the country's ambassador to the Vatican because he's gay. Jean-Luc Condelforge, a career diplomat, is in a civil union with his same-gender partner. The Roman Catholic Church, of course, opposes LGBT rights and any attempts to protect or legally recognize lesbi-gay relationships. According to a report by Agence France-Presse, another candidate was rejected because he's divorced. That apparently didn't stop Pope Benedict XVI when he visited Paris last month from warmly greeting President Nicolas Sarkozy and his new wife, Carla Bruni. Sarkozy divorced his first wife to marry Bruni. France's ambassador to Moscow will take the Vatican post.
But openly gay lawyer and former Olympic fencer Sir Terence Etherton became a member of England's and Wales' second highest court in late September. The 58-year-old Etherton was sworn in as one of 36 judges who serve on the Court of Appeal. He's the first openly gay Lord Justice of Appeal and was formally recommended by Prime Minister Gordon Brown. Etherton told the Independent newspaper that his appointment shows that diversity in sexuality is not a bar to preferment up to the highest levels of the judiciary.
Elsewhere in Europe, the Athens Pride Committee staged a demonstration in front of the Greek Parliament this week in support of the mayor of the Aegean island of Tilos and the two same-gender couples he married in June. They're all in trouble with the court of first instance on the island of Rhodes, especially the mayor. Prosecutors want to nullify the marriages and convict Mayor Anastasios Alaferis of breach of duty, punishable by imprisonment for up to 5 years. Greece's marriage law doesn't specifically prohibit marriage between people of the same gender, but the nation's top public prosecutor, Georgios Tsonidas, has said that a constitutional article relating to family issues implies that marriage is only between a man and a woman.
A court in Rome last week ordered a trial for the two men arrested outside the ancient Colosseum in July 2007 and charged with committing lewd public acts. Defense lawyers for the men, identified only by their first names in media reports, Michelle and Roberto, say that it was just a kiss. The arresting officers claim that the two were engaging in oral sex. The defense team has unsuccessfully sought video footage from nearby security cameras to show that the charges are unwarranted. The prosecuting magistrate claims that the lighting was poor and that the issue was too complex to be judicially relevant. Aurelio Mancuso, who leads one of Italy's major LGBT rights groups, Archigay, told reporters that homosexuality is being punished, not an obscene act. The trial is scheduled to begin in February. The defendants face up to 3 years in prison if they're convicted.
Police in Uganda arrested two high-profile activists described as male-to-female transgender gay and brutally detained them for a week in mid-September, according to a report by the U.S.-based International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, or IGLHRC. Georgina Oundo and Brenda Kiza were taken into custody at Oundo's home near Kampala and held at the Nabweru Village Police Station. IGLHRC says they were beaten, kicked, denied food, and pressured to reveal names and addresses of other LGBT activists. Human Rights Watch has charged that police also copied the activists' cell phone address books. Oundo and Kiza have been accused of spreading homosexuality, although IGLHRC says no such crime exists in the African nation. But consensual adult gay sex is illegal in Uganda and punishable by up to life in prison. Police say that their investigation remains open and that they'll seek additional evidence to bring the activists before a court. In the past 5 years, nearly a dozen people have been arrested on charges related to homosexuality in Uganda.
Meanwhile, some people apparently believe it's still acceptable to call for the deaths of gays and lesbians. In Australia and Canada, the Anti-Discrimination Tribunal in the Australian state of Queensland found Ron Owen, the publisher of an ultra-right-wing pro-militia magazine called Lock, Stock, and Barrel, guilty of inciting hatred against homosexuals for displaying a bumper sticker on his car parked outside government offices near Brisbane that said, "Gay rights, under God's law, the only rights gays have is the right to die." Several local lesbians took Owen to the tribunal, which awarded damages to two of them of $5,000 and a third with $2,500. Tribunal member Daryl Rangia's 77-page decision also ordered Owen, a former local elected official, to publish a written apology. "Ron Owen is entitled to publicly express his homophobic views," he wrote. "That much is required in a society that values freedom of thought and expression. However," Rangia concluded, "there are limits." Owen has vowed to appeal the ruling.
And David Popescu, who's running for a seat in the Canadian Parliament, told a candidates' forum held for students at Sudbury Secondary School in the province of Ontario that homosexuals should be executed. Police are investigating his remarks under Canada's hate crime law, which makes it a federal offense to promote hatred or incite violence against minorities, including gays and lesbians. Popescu acknowledged making the comments in an interview with the Sudbury Star newspaper. "A young man asked me what I think of homosexual marriages, and I said I think homosexuals should be executed," he said. "My whole reason for running is the Bible, and the Bible couldn't be more clear on that point." Canadians go to the polls on October 14th to elect a new government.
A gay and lesbian film festival scheduled to open in the Russian city of St. Petersburg this week was shut down before it could begin, after fire inspectors claimed that the two venues hosting it were unsafe. The scheduled four-day festival, called Side by Side, was to show 17 feature films and 5 shorts in 2 nightclubs, The Place and Sochi, each popular with students, artists, and expats. A number of filmmakers from the U.S. and Europe, including John Cameron Mitchell, best known for Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus, were also scheduled to make personal appearances during the screenings. Organizers had moved the festival to the 2 nightclubs a month earlier, after the original venue terminated their contract for what they called technical reasons. Irina Sergeyeva, one of the 3 organizers of the festival, told the St. Petersburg Times that they were indignant, upset, and distressed, and implied that local officials had orchestrated the shutdown.
And finally, a much-anticipated film chronicling the life of San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk from openly gay director Gus Van Sant and starring Sean Penn in the title role is scheduled to be released in December. But California's Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has vetoed a bill written by openly gay assemblyman Mark Leno of San Francisco that would have designated May 22nd, Milk's birthday, as a statewide Day of Significance. Schwarzenegger has signed several pieces of pro-LGBT legislation during his tenure, but vetoed 2 marriage equality bills passed by the legislature. He is nevertheless publicly opposing a November ballot measure to revoke that right ordered by the state Supreme Court in May. Harvey Milk was one of the first openly gay men in the U.S. to be elected to public office as a San Francisco supervisor in 1977. He and then-Mayor George Moscone were assassinated by Dan White, a disgruntled right-wing former supervisor in 1978. By refusing to sign the bill honoring milk, Schwarzenegger apparently bowed to right-wing groups that had mounted a massive Contact the Governor campaign against it. In his veto message, Schwarzenegger said that milk should continue to be recognized at the local level.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 4th, 2008, written by Gray Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm John Torres.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And we have two wonderful people whom I remember from last time, and maybe y'all do too. We have the event coming up, Decadent Desserts, where you can spend all the time you want and get very fat.
We have Sugar Shock.
We have two Sugar Shock and all sorts of things.
We have two very sweet ladies. Both are VPs. We have Stephanie and we have Saul.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for having us.
Please, Phil, VP of what?
Go ahead, Saul.
I'm Saul Lara. I'm VP of Public Relations for Sisters.
Mm-hmm. I'm Stephanie Peacock, VP of Outreach for Sisters.
No, you're not Stephen Peacock.
No, not
that
like
was
last
a flub
time.
Last time.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
So all your friends out in L.A., she's Stephanie. She's very much a woman.
CJ, yes, they called me Stephanie this time. Thanks.
We love you, Stephanie. So we have an event coming up.
Yeah, and it looks here, this coming Saturday.
Sunday.
It's Sunday.
Sunday.
Sunday, October 12th.
The 12th, mm-hmm. Okay. At South Beach, which is 810 Pacific, if y'all don't know where South Beach is.
We know where that is.
Yes, from 4 to 8 p.m. All right, tell us what's going to happen.
Well, Decadent Dessert, it's an annual fall event for our sisters. It is our biggest fundraiser. We are so proud this year because we have wonderful entertainment. Decadent Dessert is a gathering of sweet, delicate, just wonderful desserts and appetizers. What we do is we invite 10 to 12 restaurants yearly, and we have them come in. They donate their culinary food, and they donate their staff and their time. So it is really a wonderful thing that these restaurants do every year. We have entertainment.
We have to mention entertainment because the last time we were on the radio, somehow that got past us. So please let our listeners know.
You have a couple of things, don't you?
Well, we always try to have a little variety. At Decadent Dessert, this year, of course, our headlining entertainment is Vicky Shaw. As you all know, Vicky Shaw is a wonderful comedian, Houston-born.
She's crazy.
Yeah.
But a good way.
It's crazy good. Yeah.
It's crazy good.
She's back. She's back in Houston, and she is back with full force. And of course, our wonderful MC, which is Nancy Ford, the notorious bad girl of Houston. We love her. We have had her at Decadent Dessert as an MC before, and so any chance we get, we love to have Nancy Ford back. Sisters of Avalon will be entertaining us as well, of course, backed by some popular demand. we are having them back again, so we're really excited.
Let's talk about the food. I know I'm excited about the food. Name some of the restaurants that
we... we are very excited about the food. We have to mention Jim Benton Catering, Carter and Cooley, Amanda's Bakery. These three restaurants have been with us since almost the very beginning and come back every year.
How long has it been? How long have y'all been around?
This is our eighth year.
It's
our eighth annual Decadent Dessert. I'd also like to mention Chef Smirnoff Catering, Rainbow Lodge, who's also now, this is their sixth year with us, coming back. Cafe Adobe, this is their second year coming back with us.
My favorite place.
Absolutely great margaritas. we also have Michael's Cookie Jar for the first time coming in with us. And Momong's returning after almost 4 years, and they're coming back.
Wonderful.
And, of course, everybody knows Momong's, too.
Yes.
Java Java. wonderful Java Java Cafe.
I love Java Java.
Yep, they are awesome. What I'd like to mention... One last but not least is the original Marini's Empanadas. There's a history behind the original Marini's Empanada and the Marini family. They were here in the Montrose area a long, long time ago. Right, Stephanie?
At 1517 Westheimer, right at the curve.
That is correct. And then there was a little bit of a fire somewhere in that area, and they had to move out of the Montrose area, and they are coming back. It is an Argentinian restaurant, and we're very proud to have them.
Very good.
And actually, something special that Marini's is going to do, because there's going to be so many other sweets this year, is Marini's is actually going to do beef empanadas, veggie empanadas for anybody who's vegetarian. And everything is just succulent. And then they're also going to have their famous alfajores cookies for their sweets.
So we're going to have a sweet and a savory portion.
A sweet and a savory area, yes.
I could eat empanadas all day.
Yeah.
And I almost forgot one more caterer, Driftwood Catering. He is a new caterer in town, not really new. He's been around for a couple of years, but he has grown, and he has really wanted to do this for the past couple of years, and this year he's really into it now, so he's going to be there as well.
Now, if somebody that's not on that list wants to be part of this, maybe for next year, how would they get on the list? Do they volunteer? Do they call y'all? Do you contact them? How does it work?
What we do is when it starts getting closer to spring or so, we start looking at our list of restaurants, and we always like to bring back our wonderful just repeat offenders, which are Jim Benton, Carter and Cooley, Amanda's Bakery, Rainbow Lodge. We always like to bring them back as well. If they're able to, then we know that they're coming. And then we go ahead and we ask the other restaurants and caterers. But we always want to have new faces. We always want to have new delicacies. And anyone who wants to participate, they just need to email us through www.assisters.org. And then, of course, we keep a listing of those restaurants, and we go from there.
Yeah. Well, other than this is a wonderful evening to spend, or afternoon to spend, eating and enjoying the sweet and succulent. That's a good line. I like that. Sweet and succulent. Now, it's for a good cause, though.
Absolutely.
There's a real reason for this other than just sheer decadence.
That's a good segue.
Absolutely.
That was good.
That was absolutely right. It's a fundraiser. Our fundraising efforts are made possible through these restaurants. And, of course, we always have to thank our underwriters as well. They're wonderful. Chances Bar, for our second year, they have corporate underwritten this event now. So we have to thank them. And they're very gracious, Nick Vartsakis and his family, and all of our underwriters. So this fundraiser was established 8 years ago because a sister started to grow. We had more clients. The client needs grow. Expenses grew. The money raised from Decadent Dessert goes towards client vouchers, food vouchers, transportation vouchers, and support groups that a sister's pays for our clients.
Now, give us a little background there. There may be someone out there that doesn't know of a sister's and what it's providing. Could you give us a little more information on it?
Absolutely. And I'm going to let Stephanie Peacock, our VP of Outreach, talk to you a little bit about outreach and volunteers that we need for our growing need of clients. Yes.
Please reach out.
Thanks, Saul.
You're dead.
Actually, a sister's is a group that we provide in-home care for lesbians recovering from illness or injury. Our clients have a variety of issues that they deal with, from anywhere from MS to fibromyalgia, heart failure. Some are younger in age, and some they've just gotten older and, just can't do everything around the house anymore. Speaking from my experience again, my client has something similar to, in the same family as MS, so she has trouble lifting up, reaching, maybe vacuuming, and she gets tired out very easily. So when I go over for my visit monthly, I'll vacuum her floor, I'll scoop the kitty litter, I'll dust, do her laundry, fold her laundry, make sure it's all neat and tidy for her. Just things that we all really take for granted that we do for ourselves. And this little bit of help, allows her to stay in her own home and recover there and live a more an easier life, if you will. So basically that's what we do. We work in care teams, between two and six people on a team. Actually, I think we have one or two teams that just have our teams of one. We try not to do that. We like to have support for the team members, too, which kind of leads me into our second Saturday of the month. We have our monthly meeting, and at that meeting we have circles, so it's sort of a group meeting of several different teams with a facilitator, and we address any issues with the client that the whole team needs to learn about, or issues with the volunteers. So we really try and take care of our volunteers as well. We know that it can be difficult providing care for somebody.
So now you probably have all the volunteers you need, right?
There's no.
Absolutely no
she's
need
being
for
being
volunteers.
Nice. Oh, Stephanie, just let them know.
Go ahead. Now, am I wrong about that?
You're wrong. So wrong. So very wrong. Yeah, the last time I was on last month as well, we were trying to reach out to the community to get more volunteers. We currently have 23 clients, and we have 5 ladies on a waiting list.
Waiting list.
Yes, a waiting list.
You need people to come help.
We need people. But we're not able to take on any new clients until we staff up our current teams. So we very much need all the help we can get. We did get a few volunteers from the last visit Lynn and I had to the show.
But you need more.
But we need many more.
So if you're out there listening and you just want to get back to the community, this is a great way. It's a great organization.
Yeah, if you're looking for a way to get involved with the community, that's a very positive group. We have our education once a month during our second Saturday meeting, and the topic can vary from first aid to general wellness to, I think this month, Denise Doherty's talking about addictions. Later in the year, we're going to be talking about elder abuse. So it's really fantastic. I've grown so much with this organization. I haven't been a member even a year yet. I joined the group in November and came onto the board in July, and it's just been fantastic for me.
And it's not a lot of time you have to donate and volunteer.
Not at all. We generally ask if somebody can donate 8 hours in a month, and now what that 8 hours chalks up to is 4 hours for the second Saturday meeting, mm-hmm. and about 3 to 4 hours with a client visit, mm-hmm. And including travel to and from the client, and maybe a follow-up phone call here and there.
So it's not a lot of time.
You can do that bare minimum, or you can jump right in with both feet like Saul and I and put in, you know, 20, 30, 40 hours a week at times, certain times during the year.
Well, I'm sure it's very rewarding, and as you get involved, you start, you know, feeling better and helping people, and that helps to build. And
it's amazing. Like I said, I've gotten so much personally out of being involved with this group. I'm grateful every day that this group is here.
Very good. Well, we're here tonight to discuss the issue of fundraising, and it's a very sweet event. And I actually love it because I love dessert. So, I mean, raising money and having dessert, I mean, there's no better combination, I don't think.
Right.
And you can't get everything we're gonna offer, which is food, the appetizers and dessert and entertainment.
So if you're out there listening, where can our listeners get tickets?
Well, you can always hunt down one of the committee members, because we're always out and about trying to sell tickets here and there. But you can always go online, www.assisters.com. That's assisters.org. And just hit that Google button, and it's real quick, no transaction fee.
What happens if I thought I couldn't go, and the last minute I want to go? Can I show up at the door?
You can absolutely show up at the door. Last year we ran into a little bit of where we really did sell out the venue. We did have that problem last year that we weren't expecting. We've made some arrangements now with South Beach where we've allocated more room, let's say, so that we can, hopefully that won't happen this year.
No, hopefully it will
happen
this year.
Hopefully you will sell out.
We want a bigger space and more people.
We would love to sell out.
That's not a bad problem.
We're expecting over close to 500 people this year.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And that is, right, that's what we're wanting. That's, you know, if they're busting down the doors, that's even better. We would certainly welcome anybody who comes to the door.
Now, is this the only event you do during the year?
No, there's other fundraising events. This is the biggest one. We do have a softball tournament that happens at the early part of the year, mm-hmm. and that one that one's kind of new.
Lesbians and tees love softball.
Lesbians and softball, right? That's a combination.
I've never heard of that. What?
Like peas and carrots.
Absolutely.
I peanut butter and jam.
So when is that going to be?
Well, it It's not been given a date yet okay. for it's either going to be in March or April of next year. And of course, as soon as we have a date, of course, the news will come here first. You guys will know about
it. Is there a website they can go to keep up date with what's going on?
There's an events page, calendar page on the assisters.org website.
Okay.
We have a lot of events that come along every year that we are beneficiaries of. You know, we I'm going to go ahead and just mention some of them because they are just as important. They are very important to us as well. We do have Halloween Magic coming up November 1st. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful event. We're beneficiaries as well, one of the beneficiaries. And then, of course, there's the Black Tie. That's the new makeover now. It's going to be on New Year's Eve at Hotel Zaza, and
we're one
of the beneficiaries.
Oh, yeah. There's always a fun place to go on New Year's Eve.
Yes, right. Yes, absolutely. You know, and I always want to say thank you to the Orisis Group. We've been beneficiaries and the Crew of Olympus.
Yes.
We've been beneficiaries for their events this year as well. The community has poured out to us. We're so just absolutely blessed because of that, and we like to always say thank you any way we can. Even after Ike, as you well know, we still continued getting the underwriters and the ticket purchases after Ike, and we weren't expecting it.
We didn't have electricity, but they're out there giving back to the community.
I don't know how. Well,
we were out there with generators selling tickets.
Right. That's great.
Very resourceful. Yeah.
Tell us again, Decadent Desserts. It's this coming Sunday.
October 12th.
Brian sent me on the arm, so I remember it's Sunday from 4 to 8.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And give us some of the people that are going to be showing up. So you know that our entertainment, stars.
Yes, our entertainment, our underwriters are going to be treated this year because Vicky Shaw is going to have a pre-event VIP session.
Oh, my God.
So all of our underwriters are going to be treated at 3:15 in the afternoon. And, of course, the general public will come in from 4 o'clock on. But they're going to have a little VIP session with Vicky Shaw and cocktails, which will be fun. The judges, which are the underwriters as well, are going to be able to go to the different restaurants and caterers and taste the food while they're being hosted by the hostess, Miss Vicky Shaw herself. So it'll be a lot of fun. So once the doors open at 4 o'clock, the party starts.
All right. I want to thank you both for coming. And...
And what?
You introduce them again. Tell them who's here.
I was just sitting here listening. I was thinking about dessert.
Talk about somebody really get into the interview.
Brian's glazed over right now.
I'm thinking, oh, dessert.
He's thinking.
And has he bought his ticket yet?
Yeah.
No. We have some.
No. Don't forget to buy your tickets.
We have
it's www.assisthers.
Spell that one more time because it's kind of tricky.
ASSISTHERS.org.
Stephanie Peacock. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Laura, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
This is Queer Voices.
The way to a woman's heart. Through her lips, through the shudder of her sighs, and the motion of her hips, through the softness of her thighs, to that place between her shoulders. And if a woman wants her, do you wanna hold her? Are you thinking about a woman you might just like to see? In the eyes and say, slow dance with me. Know what you're wanting, you might ask now. show her so she'll know how that the way to your heart is through your lips, through the shudder of your sighs and the motion of your hips, through the softness of your thighs, to that place between your shoulders. And if she wants you, do you wanna hold her back? Sugar that she owns. I know what I'm wanting. I'm asking now. I can show you so you'll know how that the way to my heart, my lips, through the shudder of my sighs and the motion of my hips, through the softness of my thighs, to that place between my shoulders. And if you want me, I won't hold.
It was a long road, it was a long time, it was a long way around this stuck mind. It was a way that I was looking at the things I couldn't see. It was the way that you were looking at me. It was a late night, it was the late fall. It was a lifeline.
From her 2007 CD, True Compass, that was Trett Fury, Leap of Faith. And before that, Jamie Anderson and Dark Chocolate. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew. And Dark Chocolate was from the 1999 album Drive All Night.
This is Brian Levinka, and we are in the month of October, and this is one of my favorite months of the year, not only for the weather, but it's also GLBT History Month. Some of our listeners may not know that. And we have a very special date coming up this weekend, and in the studio tonight we have the very handsome Gary Wood.
Oh, thank you.
what's coming up this weekend?
Well, actually, Brian, this is our second, and I'm proud to say that our second annual celebration of National Coming Out Day. It takes place this weekend from 4 to 7. It's going to be at our home.
At your home?
I know.
So you're basically inviting all of Houston to come to your house.
Well, you know, I guess I am. Good thing we have security. We have police there, so.
I see. So this is the second Coming Out Day celebration. How did this get started?
Well, you know, it's kind of a funny story because my partner and I, about 4 years ago, were talking about doing something. That we just want to do something for the community. We want to make a fundraising event. And as we kind of pondered about, you know, well, what about this? It seems like all the good events were taken kind of sort of at the time. But
that's funny.
But there was one that really came up, and actually I have to give him credit where credit's due, is it was more his idea about the actual day.
Well, what's his name? Let's give him some press.
Well, we should do that. Bryant Johnson.
Yes, he's equally handsome. So.
Oh, yes. You know. Far more handsome than I am. So.
Oh, y'all are both. Okay, so it was his idea.
It was his idea. And really what we wanted to do is we wanted to pick something that was kind of special to us as well. And, you know, I don't know about you, Brian, but I've always felt that National Coming Out Day was kind of neglected. It was not something that was ever really celebrated.
Well, how long has it been around?
Well, you know, I believe this year marks its 20th anniversary.
20 years.
Yeah. That's I know it's hard to believe.
It's a special event at any rate, but 20 years, that's great.
It is, and so it makes it even better because, you know, right at the 20-year mark, not only do we get to celebrate our second one in Houston, but I get to come to your show and do that. So,
now, Gary, why is Coming Out Day important?
Well, it's,
to you.
Well, that's a great question. National Coming Out Day will be important to everybody for different reasons. And what we found was there's always a story. There's always a story or something that clicks in your head that you think about, like, oh, boy, I remember when I came out to my family or to my friends or to my coworkers. And often, you know, I can't say it's always a great coming out story, but it's something that sticks in your mind and something that's special to you. And hopefully you'll learn from it. Hopefully you can, you know, celebrate it because it is a great monumental time in your life.
So when did you come out?
Oh, my goodness. I guess I was 18. I can't remember that far.
And was it to your parents?
Yes, it was. My mother, she was, I think, all mothers really know, but
I have a theory that all moms know. They may not admit it, but they deep down they're like, there's something different.
I'm with you. I think they all know, and she kind of knew, and you know, she asked me, and you know, I didn't know how to respond, and
that's a tough. My mom asked me too when I was 18, and I denied it.
Did you deny it?
I did, because I wasn't ready, because I was going to college at A&M, and you know, that's very, very conservative. And I denied it. And then she asked me a couple years later, like 10 years later, and I said, "Yeah, I am." But
did she ask you, "Well, were you back then? You know, 10 years before?" Or
well, I think it was obvious at that point, you know, because you know, moms know, like you said,
they do.
You know, what I find is that people are a lot younger these days coming out, and I think you know, coming out day has kind of led to more social awareness, and you know, I think our society is becoming more open, and I think. And it's easier to come out at a younger age.
You know, I agree with you. And especially now, there's far less in the way of barriers. Because when I came out, I'm probably much older than you, but no, I came out in 1984. Not the easiest time to come out.
Wow, that is not just kidding.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I can't. Well, I mean, things have changed. I mean, things have changed in the last 5 to 10 years. And we're in a very historic period, I think, in time and in our the GLBT community. I think this is, you know, very historic.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, and I think that, not that it's always easy to come out, but I think it's a little bit more accepting. And
absolutely. So this Saturday, you have an event at your house.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of information that you can get about the event. If you go to pridehouston.org, there's a lot of information about it. You can buy tickets there.
Pridehouston.org. Now, tell us more. What time is it going to be?
Well, it's from 4 to 7, and it is on October 11th. The event's going to be at our house, and I think, you know, I'm kind of proud to say that this will probably be the last time we can host the event
at our
house.
It's getting too big, huh?
Yeah, last year it was 100 and, I think, 25-ish people, and we're hoping to, you know, get at least 200 people there.
There you go. Now, what sort of things can people expect when they come to the party?
Well, We won't make it a great event where it's relaxing. It's kind of a cocktail type party. We're gonna have adult beverages, some hors d'oeuvres, and we're gonna have an art auction, and that's really exciting because their art auction last year, I think that we raised all total about $6,000 last year.
That's amazing.
And it was really cool. We had at least 12 to 14 pieces of art last year.
What about this year?
This year, I think that we're going to do much better in the way of art. We have awesome art from Gallery Blue. Many dear friends are donating art, among them Bill Baldwin, and also art from Sands, which is, you know, as you know, a great artist. Mm-hmm. And he has this amazing Mardi Gras piece he donated just yesterday.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you have the silent auction that'll go on during this event.
Actually, a live auction.
A live auction?
Yeah.
I'm so used to doing silent auctions.
I know. Well, I mean, typically, you know, you see silent auctions and we wanted to do it, but then this way we can put pressure on people after a few adult beverages.
That's how fundraisers work. It's a scheme. It's like, okay, here I have this drink, and then, oh, wait, come to the auction. Yes.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned Pride. How is Pride related to this?
Well, you know, that's a great story. When I, my partner and I were thinking about how to host a fundraiser and the timing of it, we kind of decided on National Coming Out Day. And we kind of, had this vision, but we didn't know really how to execute it. The folks over at Pride have been absolutely, magnificent. And, Eric Skanes and his partner Frankie, they helped the very first year and this year, and they're helping us organize it. They have done a lot of the legwork. They printed out all the invitations. They helped with the copies.
I love the invitations. I do graphic design on the side, and I do a lot of the different designs for different organizations, and those are nice invitations.
Well, thanks. You know why it's turned out so nice?
Why is that?
Because I didn't do it. Because I don't have that kind of vision
or
talent. You
know, all gay men have gay gifts, but not all gay men have all gay gifts, you know. And graphic design is kind of one of my things, but I like that.
Well, thank you so much. And you can even see a copy of it when you go to pridehouston.org.
Now, this is your second year. Where do you see this going? I mean, you're already talking about moving venues.
Well, you know, that's a great question because I have a vision. I think everybody should start off with a vision. We had a lot of goals that we wanted to to set early on, and one was this will probably be the last year that we will have to go to a larger venue, and I envision that it's going to be, and I really respect like Bunnies and Jungle. I mean, they have such large events.
They all start out small.
And they all start off, I think, what, Bunnies start off as a house party?
Started off a house party, yeah, like 30, I think this is the 30th 30, year.
Yeah.
This is the 30th, yeah. Well, I'm in the peer organization, Bayou City Boys Club, and we started out at a warehouse, you know, just a birthday party for four guys turning 30. And now, you know, we've raised almost $1 million.
Isn't that amazing?
17 years, yeah.
Well,
and they all start out, I mean, the point is that they all start out small. I mean, every major gay fundraising, like the big parties around the country, started out very small. So
that's awesome. And we have, and that's exactly who we want to emulate, are those organizations that, and also in a great time of year, because there's not a lot of things going on in October. There's a lot of celebration.
That's very good. And then it's the fall, and the weather's changing and everything.
And we want to make it a national event. We want it to be a destination where people go, wow, you know, I want to go to, like, Bunnies and Jungle and Nashville Coming Out. Or we'll call it, you know, the out party or something by then.
The out party. Now, how are you getting the word out for this event?
Well, thankfully.
Besides the radio.
Thankfully to you, the
besides
radio.
Besides our millions of listeners out on the Internet.
The very first one is through the website, pridehouston.org. We sent out a couple of thousand, I guess, invitations, word of mouth, personal networks. Fortunately, Montrose Counseling Center is one of our beneficiaries this year.
Okay.
And they are going to do a lot of the distribution of information through their newsletter and through email. And I think that we had an email list of 2,500 or 3,000 people.
Mm-hmm. They have a very large email list. Now, how did you pick your beneficiary?
Well, the very first year was Pride. I think Pride really needs some help last year. And that was our kind of very first year. Second year, we have Pride in the Montrose Counseling Center. They just moved to a new, I guess that you probably already know that. I'm sure some of your money probably went there for Jungle, right?
Well, I'm involved with the Montrose Counseling Center. And yeah, they're moving. They moved to a new building.
Yes, fantastic. And so we really want to help them out. And kind of as a teaser, you'll probably find out about this when you come over on Sunday. But we figured, well, third year, we should probably add one more. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to create a scholarship fund.
Wow, these are great plans.
Yeah. We're pretty excited. And I think that, you know, with so many people around it And it's such a great time to celebrate something, hopefully a good memory, or to share with other people that have, you know, had challenges in their life coming out and talking about that. We had stories last year that we actually posted all over the house.
Oh, yeah.
National Coming Out stories.
Are you going to do that this year?
Well, you know, this year I think we're going to make a different twist. We probably won't do that, but next year we're going to try to get some celebrities. Their coming out stories.
I do remember last year you had kind of a notable guy at your party.
Oh, yes, very notable. He was pretty cute. James Gitzloff from Boy Meets Boy.
Yes, yes.
And this year we don't have any celebrities other than when you get there.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, gosh. Flattered to get you everywhere.
I know. This got me to the radio.
Yes. But I heard last year, I didn't get to attend last year, but I heard that he was very well received and a lot of people came because of him, so he's kind of a draw.
Yes, and you know, he was so nice. He's just down to earth, and he had to talk to him about his experience was really pretty cool, because you got a lot of insight, because he really didn't know what was going on.
Well, I think that's the tie that kind of ties us all together, because we've all kind of been in that situation, you know, coming out to either yourself or to your family or to your friends. And, you know, it's a process, and there's always that fear of rejection.
Unfortunately, there is.
Even in today's society, I mean. So we're talking to Gary Wood, who you have an event this weekend, a great event. Let's refresh. Where can we get tickets for this?
PrideHouston.org. And just go there. You can buy your tickets online. You get a lot of information about the event. And, you know, and of course, you can also probably call the Pride office as well.
Okay, and is there anyone else that you'd like to thank or recognize?
Well, you know, I have to do it because there's so many people. We don't have time to recognize them all, but there's a few people that I really need to. You know, although my name is actually on the event in a lot of different ways, actually it's my partner, my friends, and you, Brian.
Well, let's name your friends. I mean,
well, there's a lot of them, and several, like I spoke about Eric Skanes and his partner Frankie from Pride. What they've done so much. I mean, they are the ones that are running around and really doing a lot of the legwork. Malia Jones at the Montrose Counseling Center.
I love Malia.
She is awesome.
Yeah, she's great.
And
there's so many people in the community. I mean, if you started naming names of the great people in our community, people like yourself that kind of see an opportunity to raise money and unite people and bring them together for a good cause. I mean, that's what I love about Houston and just living here in this community. But I don't mean to digress. I mean,
but you're absolutely right. And also the businesses, we have fantastic food that's going to be at the event. John Ray from Tart Cafe.
Oh, we love John Ray.
Yeah, Alfred and Sarah from Picnic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then also we have Catering to Your Needs, Chuck Johnson.
I'll have to come in and sample that.
Absolutely. I mean, Chuck is a great guy. And, of course, we all know Donnie from Tony Mendola's Gulf Coast Kitchen.
Mm.
I mean, they're once again coming to the community event and helping out.
Now, is this being put on by yourself? Do you need any help, any volunteers? Can we get our listeners to maybe pitch in and help, or
pitch in by donating? I want everybody to come and have a great event. A lot of the Pride Houston folks are going to be out there. They're going to be donating their time as always, so that's going to be really nice.
Now, it's going to be at your house. I don't know if we want to give out the address on the radio. I'm not sure what your comfort level is.
No, I think we should probably go to the website.
let's have our listeners go to the website. That's pridehouston.org. And to come and celebrate National Coming Out Day, which is?
It's on October 11th, this Saturday at 4 o'clock.
It's the 20th anniversary of Coming Out Day.
And 20th anniversary.
Please come out and celebrate this very special day with Gary Wood, his friends, and everybody else in the community.
Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Thank you, Gary.
I've been this way before, walked in and out that door, and now I find myself standing here again. Tell me this is new, 'cause this time it's with you, and you're not like any other man I knew. It's not so easy to have lost and then to try to love again, and so I'm searching for the answers that will tell me how to begin.
Bye.
Thomas from a 2006 CD titled Faith Unashamed and a song titled What Am I Gonna Do With You? This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee again.
And Brian Levinka's here too.
Yes, we have, you want to be called by what now?
Landon Jeremy Lane.
Landon Jeremy Lane. Okay. I have it written down here, Landon, and then he said Jeremy earlier. But the most importantly, he is president of B-Flag.
B-Flag.
B-Flag, right. Yes. Not to be confused with P-Flag. Blind Friends of Lesbians and Gays, which is a relatively new organization. Why don't you tell us about it, Jeremy?
Well, B-Flag National started... It was formed in 1996, and we achieved getting our charter in 2000 with the ACB, which is the American Council for the Blind. We're the first special interest group of its kind, especially of the GLBT ilk with low vision and so forth. We obtained our 501c3 status in 2003 and have over 200 members at this point.
Is that national or is that here in Houston?
That's actually national. Demographics suggest that we have anywhere between 350 and 650 low vision or blind GLBT in the metro Houston area, but because records are confidential with state agencies, it's more of a matter of them knowing that we exist and finding us when they can.
Well, how do they find you?
Well, we at this point have our mailing address is 1302 Wall Drive, PMB number 478, Houston, Texas 77019. Our phone is 832-433-1387, and our website is bflagtexas.org and also bflaghouston.org.
Well, as far as the organization is concerned, it's providing a forum for people to discuss and get together concerning GLBT issues. Is that pretty much it? Or tell me more.
Really, it is that. A lot of it is to do with people that are low vision and blind, of course, in that... the issues are very different, really. PFLAG once asked me, why BFLAG? Why don't you meet with us? And it's in much the same way as the transgendered and so forth community, that we just simply have a lot of different issues. However, PFLAG and ourselves are very supportive of one another on the national and local level. And where there's blind people, there are still going to be parents, especially those that are GLBT. So I do believe that we do have a lot in common, though we are not formally affiliated.
How did you get involved? I mean, you started at the national level, or did you start here?
Actually, I started at the national level. In 2006, I went to Jacksonville, Florida. That was my first convention. And it was a whole new world for me. I actually thought for the longest time I was the only low vision or blind person. Technically, I personally am just low vision, or that's the term I prefer.
Can I stop you there? You say low vision and blind. Mm-hmm. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Low vision is like legally blind is the technical term, but that's more for having like an ID or a driver's license, rather. Anything 2200 or over, the average person sees it 20/20. What one individual sees at 20 feet, another individual sees at 20 feet, the average Joe. What in my case, I'm 2300 in one eye and 2400 in the other. With that, it means that what the average Joe sees at roughly 400 feet away, I see at 20 feet away. So a little over a football field length. to put it in perspective, and that's how the acuity is rated. Most people are completely blind after 2900, which it does go that far. Many people seem to have the understanding with hearing impaired and deaf, but a lot of people don't understand that there's a difference between low vision and blind, or that there's an area there. I'm often accused myself of either faking being sighted or faking being blind, one of the two.
That's funny.
And there's thousands of diseases and many reasons to lose one's sight. Sometimes it's genetic, diabetes, you know, just a very wide variety. Some people have 20/20 vision but have actually tunnel vision, which is like putting a pinprick through a piece of paper and seeing through it. So they only have 5% in some cases of their vision, though that is 20/20, but no peripheral whatsoever. And even they sometimes have service animals and ID canes.
Now, do you experience a lot of discrimination from the GLBT community? Is there discrimination on the part of blind and low vision people?
There can be. With the GLBT community, it's already a very vision-based world as it is, and then the GLBT community is just that much more. So I find that some people are a little bit uncomfortable around me or our group, and there's really no reason to be. People trip over their words some. They're afraid to use the word sight and see and you know, did you see a movie and so forth. And we actually all use, even the totally blind, use these terms. In their case, they may listen to Will and Grace, or they may listen to a movie in the literal sense, but they still say things like it's good to see you, which may mean it's good to be in your presence. But it, all the words are, you know, the same for us. So it's good to not feel uncomfortable around us. A lot of people have the same types of jobs. Obviously, we're not surgeons, but you know, we do things like there is the blind attorneys group within ACB, which is another affiliate, Blind Lawyers Association, blind massage therapists, and even within Houston, my understanding is that the taxicab service employs a lot of blind individuals to be their dispatchers. There are many jobs to be held, and a lot of technologies out there to assist in doing so. I mean, in the new age of technology.
It seems like BFLAG is pretty unique in that it caters to the gay community. Are there any other sort of gay type organizations that cater to this segment of the community?
As far as we know, we are the first of its kind with dealing with the low vision and blind. As far as other countries, as far as our research can tell, we may be the only group, even though there are many deaf oriented GLBT groups in the world.
Now, how did this happen in Houston? Did you bring this? Was this your baby?
Actually, it kind of was. I went to the first convention in 06, and the following year I was very aggressive in trying to have them create affiliate guidelines within our constitution, which at that time didn't exist. BFLAG Texas formed in November of 06, but we weren't formally an affiliate since there were no words for it in our constitution. I did eventually get on the board a year after in 07 as member at large and focused on that. The previous board was unable to, over a several year period, unable to come up with these guidelines. So I assertively worked with our new president, Don Brown, and our vice president, Mark Hanohano, and we worked together and came up with something in just a few months. And as of 08, we now have affiliate status program, and that's when BFLAG Texas became the first state affiliate, as well as three others, which is in D.C., Tulsa, Oklahoma, and a special interest group called MALMA, which is Mid-Atlantic Lifetime Members Association, which is predominantly directed at fundraising for BFLAG National.
But in the state of Texas, you're the only stop, the only show in town.
First one so far, with Houston being our first chapter. We hope eventually to have some in Dallas and Austin and so forth. Austin is probably going to be our next stop because that's the blind capital of Texas.
Well, it has the school. Is that right? The school for the blind?
Several of them, actually.
Yeah. Well, I have a question concerning that. What are the special needs or the needs of that your organization helps with the GLBT community? What special needs are there? There's some obvious ones that come to mind, but not all may be that way. What are those special needs that you help with the people? And just as a visually impaired person, what are those needs that you need that we can help you with?
Well, we're really hoping to get a larger membership. We know that there are other low vision or blind GLPT in the city or around the city. It's just, once again, it's a matter of them finding us. Our contacts at Commission for the Blind and Lighthouse and different organizations say that there are many, but of course it's confidential state information. Not that that should or would be on any of that information. They just, these counselors personally know some of these individuals. And with each passing week, we have another member, it seems like, that are slowly finding out that we exist and are really seeking us out. Even as much as today, I had a new member sign with us that had lost his vision just a year and a half ago. And locally, I'd like to see, within Houston for its size, there's not enough things like audible lights and this sort of thing to help people get around that for such a large city that it is. So that's some of the stuff we're moving towards wanting to help push is audible lights, which are lights that make tones or sounds, letting the person walking know when it's safe to walk. And as far as the community, just getting more Braille menus and large print menus out and available so more GLBT, low vision or blind persons, or anyone that's low vision or blind, can really get out and still, you know, feel like a part of the world, a part of the community, without having to always rely on someone else. A lot of us do tend to try to struggle for our independence as best as we can.
Do some of the restaurants already have a Braille menu upon request, or is that some part of the need that just hasn't happening?
It so far it's just not happening with a lot of the smaller non-corporate. When you have very large corporation type places, then you will find that. But a lot of the local places don't as yet. We're hoping to change that. And they don't need a whole lot of Braille menus, just two or three. It's not like they're going to be an onslaught.
the masses are coming.
Yes.
So hopefully we have listeners out there that might be interested in joining your organization. How do they get in contact with you? Where can they get more information?
Our website is beeflikehouston.org and beeflagtexas.org, and you can get in touch with myself or any of our board of directors through those websites. We also have a mailing address that I'd given out earlier.
Well, let's give it out again, in case we have some listeners that came.
They may have missed it earlier on. Let's give it again.
It's 1302 Wall Drive, PMB number 478. Houston, Texas, 77019. Our phone number is 832-433-1387.
Now, how are you? What's your campaign to get the word out in Houston? Are you have any plans to do like any community organization events? Maybe does Pride, is that in the future for BFLAG?
We attended our first, as in our own group, we attended Pride 08. And it was, we pulled it together in about 3 weeks, thanks to Rainbow Pages and Malware and Love Electra t-shirts. We were able to somehow pull together in 3 weeks what takes some people almost the whole year to do. So I consider it an amazing feat.
Absolutely.
We were at the tail end, so the first thing I told my board of directors is, you know, the applications are in January. We will have the money ready for this because I do not want to be 103 again this year.
Pride is very picky about when you turn them in and they put you, in line, accordingly.
Right. Well, it's so close to the ACB convention, I usually have a hard time juggling them both. The ACB convention's a week later and often in another state, and so I felt very fortunate and successful that we were able to pull it off this past year.
And then next year you're going to start earlier and get more, hopefully have more people, more members?
Yes, we already do have a few more members just since Pride, and actually because of Pride 08, their magazine had our ad in it, and a few people have called in just in relation to that after Pride.
Well, I hope you get some more from our show. I hope people, because this is the first time, and when Brian mentioned your organization, I didn't even know the organization existed.
And she's very visible in the community. I mean, she's the president of the caucus, and to think that she didn't hear about it, and then I didn't hear about it, I'm like, okay, we got to get the word out.
We need to get the word out and support your organization, because I hadn't really thought about those special needs that our community has. Now, the visually impaired have, you know, the lighthouse and all of that, but some just getting along each day, like you said, in restaurants and other places that you need to go, to have Braille menus or whatever you may need. I thought it was interesting about the walk lights. to have them tones in there. We who are out there and don't have a difficulty with sight, how important it is for other people. We just don't realize how grateful we should be.
And you're right. Austin is way ahead of us in terms of, you know, having those amenities, I think, because those are everywhere in Austin and not so much here. Now, I had a question. How do the gay people meet? I mean, currently. I mean, do they go to bars or?
I seem to be, by most people's account, the first, if not the only, low vision or blind person that seems to go out. I would like for it to happen more often, really. That's what our hopes are, is there's a lot of isolation involved and a feeling of not belonging. Whereas with myself, I think that any GLBT person really should be given how much prejudice we already face in our lives, you know, it seems like they would be a lot more welcoming and encompassing, and they often are. There's some people that are afraid to approach me and others that are very polite and very cool. I do sometimes get some unusual questions, which often makes for a good story down the road.
No, you can't stop there. We got to hear, like some experiences, like what are some of the questions?
How do blind people know where their mouth is when they eat? How do blind people fall in love? Wow. These are some of the more unusual questions.
That's amazing.
That is. Well, we all think those things. You know, when you stop and think about it, those that aren't visually impaired, you think about, well, how do you do some of the things the simplest tasks that we have can be very complicated for someone that's visually impaired.
I've talked to people, even some of our members who are totally blind and always have been, and I've asked them some of the same questions. I myself am just low vision, so I do have some vision. But they said it came with all the other senses. The scent of a male, the personality of a male is what helped them define that they were ultimately homosexual at some point.
Exactly. Now, what are some of the myths or misconceptions about being visually impaired? You know, you hear different things, but What is your take on that?
The heightened senses. Some people think that we're like the X-Men. it's not quite like that.
You're not?
No, oh, no.
God, what a myth buster.
Right. Well, we mainly just, it's based on the remaining senses, and some of them aren't the ones that people think of. It's really that we rely on those senses more, hearing and the sense of smell and so forth. But there's other things. We intend to have, what's it, that other thing I'm trying to remember? Oh, good memory. We tend to have,
Wait, that was funny. Okay, that was
a good one.
We tend to have a good memory. We don't always get along with our roommates that are sighted because they often move things on us and we're used to a certain order, which I've had in the past, but they mean well.
That's almost tacky to do something like that.
That is tacky. My grandfather was blind. He had gotten rabies when he was young, and he would be very upset when I was young at moving the furniture around. I used to get yelled at, but I do have experience with that, and yeah.
I could see you doing that.
I was a little devil.
You're a little devious thing, you. But I guess the one thing is blind people or visually impaired people are just like all the rest of us. I know that it is uncomfortable.
Jack says you
were
gay. Of course you moved the furniture around.
I'm like, this furniture is not working for me. I've got to move that futon over to the corner. No, I'm...
Of course, it didn't bother anybody about the paint colors.
Oh, it bothered me, but, you know...
Can you really feel colors? Another myth here.
No. We do have the technology now that there are color detectors. They're a little on the expensive side, but some people who are totally blind. There is a terminology amongst our own community, totals and partials. I'm a partial is impartially sighted. Total is totally blind. And if you ever see a person who is visually impaired or blind, even people often assume with me, because I have albinism's disease, which is an extreme sensitivity to light, I wear sunglasses and do sport an identification cane, which is the red and white cane. People often assume that I'm totally blind, and it's always good to ask. It's usually not going to hurt our feelings if you just ask if we're low vision or blind.
Well, I think that's important to kind of to get that out to our listeners, because, you know, there is a certain kind of, reservation, I guess, to asking a question like that. Because I don't think you want to offend somebody, and I guess, the fear is you will offend somebody. So you're saying it's okay to ask either low vision or blind.
Right. It should be. Most of us have a pretty good sense of humor and are used to people asking about our site. And, it doesn't usually offend us. It's usually, in many cases, it could just be an old story because people ask frequently out of curiosity.
I'm sure you've heard many, many questions. You've heard every permutation of the question, I'm sure.
I get a lot of interesting questions. But other courtesy rules would be, never, ever pet a service animal if they have their harness on. Always ask the master, and please don't be offended if they tell you no. It's a $70,000-plus dog.
Holy cow, I had no idea.
Genetic filtration training.
$70,000?
Yes, as much as $70,000 for training. They do genetic, filtration and all kinds of things. It's a very long process, and that's part of their training. So it if you do it, then other people do it, and it distracts the dog and confuses them. Always ask the owner first. Never take a blind person's cane away from them. I have a few friends that like to pick with me on that one, but that's considered to be pretty inappropriate.
Oh, talk about a lot of tackiness. Who in the world would do that? Well,
they just like to pick. But if I were totally blind, then it would be definitely a bad thing to do. And I've told them, don't do that in public. If we're just picking around, it's just us, that's fine. But you give people the wrong message when you do that sort of thing. Never refer to us in the third person. I've been to different restaurants where people would ask the person I'm with what I want to drink, and I'm real quick to say, I want a Pepsi. you don't have to do that. Often, even with the totals, they can tell that you're the voice of the waiter or waitress is directed at them just by sound. If it's a large group, then you simply lightly tap them on the shoulder, and let them know that you're referring to them.
You don't wrap them with a cane?
Preferably not, no.
All right,
no, you don't mess with waiters in any... waiters will get you back, yeah. So hopefully... we have listeners out there that are visually impaired, blind, low vision, and they're hearing the show, and they're listening to the president of the BFLAG, this organization in Houston, and they're interested and they want more information. Where do they go? Where's the best place to get information?
The best place, really, we are still doing kind of an overhaul on our website.
I love your website, by the way.
Well, thank you.
I do a lot of web design, and it's a great website.
What's the web address?
It's bflagtexas.org. And also there's beeflikehouston.org. At this point, they pretty much have virtually the same information, but either of those will be fine, and we can be reached. Any of our board can be reached through both of those websites.
And you gave an address and telephone number also?
Yes.
Let's give that one more time. Good segue.
1302 Wall Drive, spelled W-A-U-G-H, Drive, PMB number 478, Houston, Texas 77019. And our phone number, our business line, is 832-433-1387.
Well, is there anything we might have missed that you want to cover before we close?
I think that covers most everything. We are involved right now in doing some resolutions to change some Texas state legislature in regards to the identification cards to being allowed to be able to put things like being legally blind, deaf, or diabetic due to certain situations that some of our members have come across with the police department, different things like that. Not that they haven't been great. They were very helpful in watching out to make sure that people didn't pester us, nor did horses trample over our members during the Pride Parade. So we're very appreciative of that.
Yes, that's always good. Well, we've been talking with Landon Lang, president of BFLAG.
Not PFLAG.
That's Blind Friends of Lesbians and Gays, and this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Can the GOP's vice presidential nominee make the Democrats' lesbo-gay supportive record seem pale in comparison? We'll let you decide after this important message.
We've got good news, bad news, and good news about your favorite international LGBT radio program. The good news is that you can now hear free podcasts of This Way Out. To subscribe, log on to www.thiswayout.org. The bad news is that we're still owed thousands of dollars from our former online outlet, and that puts This Way Out in serious financial jeopardy. Stations get the program from us for free. You can get the podcast for free. We're also free of corporate sponsors. Producing and distributing the program, however, is not free. But the other good news is that This Way Out's unique on-the-scene reports covering the fight for same-gender marriage equality, from the world's first legal weddings in the Netherlands to the victories in Canada, Massachusetts, and California, are now available in a two-CD collection called Altered States. This Way Out listener supporters can get this and other special programs by visiting our website. Please say, I do, at www.thiswayout.org.
In the U.S. this week, the headline-making machine belonged to Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin. First, the Alaska governor drew a low score in another big network news interview. That questionable outing set the stage for Palin's only shot at her Democratic counterpart, Senator Joe Biden, in a one-on-one debate. Then, against the backdrop of her lesbi-gay-related comments at those events, a major queer advocacy group revealed the Palin-related sentiments of LGBT activists in her own hometown. Palin has mostly been shielded from the press, so every word counted when she met up with CBS's Katie Couric. Few of those words counted in her favor, as she failed to recall any significant Supreme Court rulings other than the pro-choice landmark Roe v. Wade, and then couldn't name any news publications she regularly reads. Couric also zeroed in on Palin's religious views and how they affect her position on LGBT civil rights.
The governor told us, though she's not a member of any church, she visits a couple of them regularly when she's home. She took issue with news reports that one of them, the Wasilla Bible Church, sponsored a conference where gays could be made straight through prayer.
When the media gets it wrong, it frustrates Americans who are just trying to get the facts and be able to make up their mind on about a person's values. And, you know, I don't know what prayers are worthy of being prayed, and I don't know what prayers are going to be answered or not answered. But as for homosexuality, I am not going to judge Americans and the decisions that they make in their adult personal relationships. I have one of my absolute best friends for the last 30 years who happens to be gay, and I love her dearly, and she is not my gay friend. She is one of my best friends who happens to have made a choice that isn't a choice that I have made, but I'm not going to judge people.
More people tuned in for the October 2nd Palin-Biden debate than watched the first contest between presidential candidates John McCain and Barack Obama the previous week. Moderator Gwen Ifill asked Biden to compare his stance on same-gender couples benefits to Alaska's law granting them. But Ifill first erroneously implied that Palin had supported those benefits, which started the music for the dance she was able to do around the question.
Do you support, as they do in Alaska, granting same-sex benefits to couples?
Absolutely. Do I support granting same-sex benefits? Absolutely, positively. Look, in an Obama-Biden administration, there will be absolutely no distinction from a constitutional standpoint or a legal standpoint between a same-sex and a heterosexual couple. The fact of the matter is that under the Constitution, we should be granted. Same-sex couples should be able to have visitation rights in the hospital, joint ownership of property, life insurance policies, etc. That's only fair. It's what the Constitution calls for. And so we do support making sure that committed couples in the same-sex marriage are guaranteed the same constitutional benefits as it relates to their property rights, the rights of visitation, the rights of insurance, the rights of ownership, as heterosexual couples do.
Governor, would you support expanding that beyond Alaska to the rest of the nation?
Well, not if it goes closer and closer towards redefining the traditional definition of marriage between one man and one woman. And unfortunately, that's sometimes where those steps lead. But I also want to clarify, if there's any kind of suggestion at all from my answer, that I would be anything but tolerant of adults in America choosing their partners, choosing relationships they deem best for themselves. You know, I am tolerant, and I have a very diverse family and group of friends, and even within that group, you would see some who may not agree with me on this issue, some very dear friends who don't agree with me on this issue. But in that tolerance also, no one would ever propose, not in a McCain-Palin administration, to do anything to prohibit, say, visitations in a hospital or contracts being signed, negotiated between parties. But I will tell Americans straight up that I don't support defining marriage. marriage as anything but between one man and one woman. And I think through nuances we could go round and round about what that actually means, but I'm being as straight up with Americans as I can in my non-support for anything but a traditional definition of marriage.
Let's try to avoid nuance, Senator. Do you support gay marriage?
No, Barack Obama nor I support redefining from a civil side what constitutes marriage. We do not support that. That is basically a decision to be able to be left to the faith and people who practice their faith, the determination what you call it. The bottom line, though, is, and I'm glad to hear the governor, I take her at her word, obviously, that she thinks there should be no civil rights distinction, none whatsoever, between a committed gay couple and a committed heterosexual couple. If that's the case, we really don't have a difference.
Is that what you said?
Your question to him was whether he supported gay marriage, and my answer is the same as his, and it is that I do not.
Wonderful. You agree. On that note, let's move to foreign policy.
Palin's contention that some of her best friends are raised the curiosity of the Human Rights Campaign. The advocacy organization sent staff member Michael Cole to Wasilla, Alaska, in search of LGBT activists in the governor's hometown.
To be honest, I didn't expect to find many gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender people in Wasilla, but we met dozens in the small town. Unfortunately, many were afraid to be on camera.
Primarily because of this vice presidential nomination. And I teach 400-plus children, every kiddo that goes to my school. And all it takes is one family to make life very difficult.
What people told me is that Wasilla wasn't always like this. The two powerful churches that Sarah Palin has belonged to turned their fundamentalist ideology into a political mission, and life changed here.
Sarah was a member of the Assembly of God Church in Wasilla, which are pretty much the most fundamentalist anti-gay groups in Alaska.
They became very politically active, and Sarah was a part of that movement.
There was a huge influence of religion, and that's really across the state. In Wasilla, in terms of Sarah Palin, I know that she put a lot of people in position who are associated with her church.
Certainly we have religious freedom in this country, thank goodness, but it seemed oftentimes that her religious values intersected oftentimes with her role in the state and her role as mayor.
In the scandal over banning books at the town library, the right wing started exerting their newfound power.
When Sarah became mayor, the way she tells the story, she was just asking rhetorical questions of the library about censorship. But this was while the church was actively picketing to have several gay children's books removed from the shelves. Pastor, I Am Gay was one of the books that the Assembly of God Church wanted to get off the shelves and lock up, and that Sarah Palin wanted to get off the shelves and lock up.
When we put them in the Wasilla Library, the first two copies just disappeared. You know? And so we put more in, and we know that on three occasions she talked to the librarian about removing certain books.
For the folks I met, the thing that scares them most are the infamous ex-gay ministries.
You know, she comes from a religious ideology and a church organization that supports conversion therapy or reparative therapy. And as a therapist, the thought of someone at that high a level who supports that is terrifying.
Her church was one of the sponsors of a recent conference in Anchorage about changing homosexuals to heterosexuals through prayer. I have a lot of friends who have gone through the torture of change, you know, programs. They're awful. They're cruel.
I pray about that a lot because her concept of, quote, family values, unquote, is just so anathema to the idea that gay and lesbian people have a right to exist, that we have a right to live as decent, common folks.
Despite all of this, Sarah Palin has said she has gay friends.
I know there have been rumors that, you know, she has gay friends here and is gay friendly, and certainly I don't know all of the roughly 18,000 that we know of gay people in the state, but the people I know, don't call her a friend.
I think we need to be a community. We need to be, you know, united in this. Have to just put our foot down and say we're not going to accept it. We're not going to accept being marginalized or made second-class people.
That's my experience of her as a mayor. She does the same thing as a governor for the state, and it scares the crap out of me what might happen if she becomes the vice president. Because she'll do it to the country. I mean, I think she's worse than Dick Cheney and a better shot.
I'm coming out against Sarah Palin.
I am coming out against Sarah Palin.
I'm coming out against Sarah Palin.
I'm as opposed to the election of Sarah Palin as a person can be.
The Human Rights Campaign's Michael Cole spoke with activists Jamie Rodriguez and Breon Lyons, Pastor I Am Gay author Reverend Howard Beth, Dr. Marky Bloomer, and an anonymous teacher in Governor Sarah Palin's Wasilla, Alaska. For more information, log on to www.hrc.org. And speaking of coming out, the big day for it is October 11th. The 20th annual National Coming Out Day commemorates the 1987 National March on Washington for LGBT rights. Gay radio producer Buddy Johnston brewed this tuneful coming out mix featuring organizer-entertainer Robin Tyler and assassinated San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk.
Listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The phone training for individuals, families, and organizations wanting to help the 2008 Houston Press Music Awards Best Radio Station is coming up fast. Trainings will help you take pledges during KPFT's Fall Membership Drive, October 15th to November 1st. The volunteer info session is required for anyone wanting to become a volunteer with KPFT. All who attend the phone training must also attend the volunteer info session. To participate, just attend only one of the following dates. Wednesday, October 8th, the phone training happens 6 to 6:45 p.m. and the volunteer info session happens 6:45 to 7:45 p.m. Monday, October 13th, the phone training happens 6 to 6:45 p.m. and the volunteer info session happens 6:45 to 7:45 p.m. Sign up now at volunteer@kpft.org or 713-526-4000, extension 316. This is KPFT Houston.
Are you tired of hearing about what divides people?
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.